back to another Atlanta Sales Talk Radio Show. I am your co-host, Mr. Stephen Cadley, and I have with us Mr. Andy Lowe.
Oh, so now we're like peers. No, normally I'm your host and my co-host is Andy. So now we're you're the co-host. Well, does that make me primary host?
No, actually.
Okay, I was going to say
I need to know the knobs over there.
So I was going to say I need to know if I got to run things over here today.
Yeah, that's right.
I was counting on not.
Yeah. Okay. So without all that said.
You see, you can't give me that kind of room, Steve. I'll run with it.
You know what? I want to remember to do this and continue to do it on Fridays because this is a special show. We're coming out here on a Wednesday here, and Andy just got through with his workout, and so he's all fired up. So
Yeah, I'm all amped up, man. The energy's cranking.
It is. It should be because we're going to have a great show. We have with us the purveyors of the Herman Brain Dominance Assessment, HBDI. And I'm just really juiced about having the two of you on the show. And I have the CEO, Miss Ann Herman.
That's right.
And then I also have Oren Silas on here, VP of Sales for Herman International. And I'm almost beside myself with the excitement here. So with all that said, Ann, tell us about yourself and welcome to the show.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having us here. So Herman International is—it's actually something that was—it's a company that was started by my father. So, mm-hmm. It's all about understanding how you think in the brain. And I actually grew up in a household where my dad was doing experiments with me when I was in my early teens. So it started actually prior to the beginning of this company that I began to look at issues of the brain. So some people think, you know, meet the Fockers, this is actually what I grew up with. So it was kind of an interesting environment. And I actually had a career in sales prior to working at Herman International. You may not know that.
I did not know that.
Overseas, no. I lived in France, and I was overseas for almost 15 years in France.
Actually, I do recall that now. Some of our earlier conversations, yeah.
So it's really interesting for me to talk about what we're talking about here today because I kind of in my early years had some formative. Kind of exposure to being in sales, and ultimately what happened is my dad who developed all of this research at GE, he was really trying to figure out how do we get how people are thinking, and begin to then be able to leverage that to make better connections with them. At the end of the day, that's really, and it was both in management, in the classroom, as customers. So it was really about getting inside the head of the person that you're working with. And not in a manipulative way, but in a way that allows you to then better do what you're trying to do, which is influence, engage, teach, you know, all of those things.
Yeah.
So GE actually funded all this research that led to the development of the HBDI. And so part of the challenge he had was that, you know, he wired me up after school. So I'd come home from
literally,
school, get wired, literally got wired up to the EEG for testing. And he actually did some of that at GE, believe it or not. And it became really clear that most executives were not going to put up with that. So he needed to come up with another way to understand what was going on in their heads. So the assessment was actually born out of that initial research and validated against that initial research.
So let me back up. So a lot of his research was really, you know, wiring people up and then asking them a series of questions to understand how they're thinking. I mean, the whole whatever.
EEG.
EEG. And comparing that, it wasn't acceptable in corporate America. I can see that. But then the assessments actually validated against the EEG.
It really grew out of the EEG data. And clearly it was, you know, so he would say, let me ask you a series of questions and let me see how you respond to a given activity, if you are adding up a series of numbers, you're drawing, et cetera. And then let me ask you a series of questions about, you know, what your job is, how you prefer to think, what you enjoy at work, et cetera. And then he would begin to look at correlations. And it became clear that the model that emerged through the assessment mm-hmm. had so much power because it meant it was accessible to so many people around the globe, whereas wiring people up was just not ever going to give him that access. And it ended up being a metaphor for how we think. So, you know, it's even though it came initially out of that physiological research, it's really about looking at having a model that's easy to use, easy to understand, mm-hmm. and that you can apply to get better results. So as, you know, a second generation leader, I moved back from France and having done some work with this overseas, decided to work with him. And I'm all about application. So it's about understanding how you think. But at the end of the day, that's kind of interesting. But if you can't do anything with it, then... So it's really, how do you think? So I'm talking to you. I'm looking for clues to understand. You and I know each other. But how do I better understand what it is that you're looking for in terms of information? And how do I respond to that in a way that... that makes our lives both a lot easier.
Okay.
And so we have a company that spans the globe. I've got the company in France that I started, and we've got offices all over the globe. The work has been translated, and what is the number, Oren?
17 languages.
17
right
languages.
Now.
Outstanding.
And we offer a wide array of programs targeted mostly at a managerial level and also leaders in terms of looking at, you know, how do I use this understanding to be a better leader, salesperson, manager, communicator, et cetera. So that's really, in essence, what we do.
Good. So, and HBDI, there's an I on the end, and I said the Herman Vane Dominance Assessment. I was like, yeah, all right, that doesn't add up there. What does HBDI stand for?
Yeah, so it's the Herman Vane Dominance Instrument. And that just goes to show, my dad was a physicist by training. So he was. This was a scientific experiment that he was doing. So this was an instrument. So it's actually, so it's the HBDI is the Herman Vane Dominance Instrument. Absolutely.
Outstanding. And I did a lookup on your dad on Wikipedia. I mean, wow, what an impressive individual. I mean, and I know it resonated with my wife, who's a developing and phenomenal artist. Yes, Susan, I said that on the radio.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, and I look at your dad as an artist and all the awards he won. I mean, humanitarian, HR professional, physicist, phenomenal. And then actually taking something that actually works across all of those mediums, so to speak, or those ways of thinking, and true Renaissance man.
Well, you know, it's interesting because he actually developed it because he always wondered why he seemed to be able to hang out with the music people and the artists as well as the scientists. And he knew that he had that own, that complexity within himself, and they felt like very different crowds. And he thought, how come I'm able to straddle those two worlds? So all of this research, you know, it's all about the business, right? And it's all about understanding the business. A lot of it was about answering questions about his own head and kind of how he thought and why it was that he had that sense of duality. And of course, that meant that he had some left brain and some right brain.
Mm-hmm.
And that this work helped explain it. So, you know, a lot of what we end up using in the real world often comes from that personal desire to understand how we think ourselves. So, and he became a late life artist. So it wasn't until he was in his 50s that he started painting.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting. That's phenomenal. All right. So, and I have some additional questions, but Oren, I want to bring you into the fray because, you know, this is Atlanta Sales Talk Radio. So we're talking about, as VP of Sales, how do you sell this stuff? But anyway, before we go there, tell us about yourself.
Well, I'll be glad to. And thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. And as Ann said, we, you know, we have this instrument. And so the way, what I do is I get to lead the sales effort as we try to partner with businesses in terms of how they achieve their corporate objectives. And so we look at this. One element is the HBDI. It is part of a framework that's called whole brain thinking. Mm-hmm. And our job is to go out, find work with businesses, understand what their issues and needs are, and then talk to them on how we present those solutions. And my background is in sales. I started out as a salesperson right out of college, moved into sales management and sales leadership, and I've had the opportunity to work here with Herman for the last 7 years.
Outstanding. So, and so now, because you're selling, well, let me ask, who is your ideal purchaser, buyer in an organization? I know you're looking at some of your companies. It started with GE is really the research. But then you look at, I mean, your customer base is the who's who of the Fortune 500, or if not the Fortune 100, really. Hmm. So that's expanding. But who's your ideal customer?
That's a really interesting question. So part of the opportunity and the challenge of the work has been the breadth of application, right? So because when you're talking about the brain and thinking, it applies to practically everything that you do in business.
Absolutely.
So I would say that, you know, we've got kind of a few different domains. On the management development side, the sort of classic management development in terms of developing people, this is relevant to almost every stage in the development of a manager or a leader, high potential, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So you've got your classic HR training and development buyer who is interested in really understanding how do we, in most cases, they are looking at how they can do whatever it is that they're doing better. And by understanding thinking and learning, they can really improve what it is that they're doing.
Okay.
And then on the other hand, we also have people in sales organizations looking at, okay, that not only that internal development piece, but also working with the external customers, mm-hmm. how we can better connect with them through an understanding of thinking. So we have a wide array, and Orin, I'm probably missing some folks, but I would say most of the time that's within a large corporate environment. That's pretty much who we're talking to.
No, I think you're correct, Ann, in terms of, and just to build on that. So it ends up being in that HROD domain a lot of times, but then as we move into the line organization, and the sales arena is a very good example, because we're often looking at how do you help a salesperson have that better interaction with a client. Mm-hmm. But just as important, we're trying to help a sales manager and a salesperson have a better interaction. And so we can apply that framework in both of those arenas and really have a positive impact.
So really, in between, you know, a team-based, so the manager to the salesperson or team to, you know, the individual on the team, and then also salesperson to the customer.
Absolutely.
Interesting. And the use of the instrument in that regard. Because I've heard, now, I guess a sidebar question to bring up competition, to a certain extent, you know, the DISC tool, you think about, you know, Myers-Briggs. Although I don't think there's, Myers-Briggs isn't all that applicable in the sales environment because it's just too complex, hence why I think the federal government loves that, because it just, you need to hire a consultant to figure it out. Certified in Myers-Briggs, it's a great tool, but I'm not sure, you know, the applicability in a more of a sales environment because things are moving fast. But in DISC, you know, I see that as simplified, but there's a, you know, the four quadrant model, but I think the HBDI is probably a deeper tool in regards to that.
I'm gonna give Orin a shot at this as well. But so one of the things that I get excited about, because, you know, again, I was in sales and I've also been in other roles, and so having grown up on the stuff and then gotten away from it and then been in a business situation where I started encountering all the issues that you always encounter in business, and then coming back to the work, one of the things that I get most excited about with what we do is you've got the HBDI, but in fact it's actually part of a system. And when you look at organizations, they're really systems of thinking individuals. Okay, so when we begin to look at the whole brain model, it applies not only to individuals, but it applies to product design, to interface, to communication. We actually have a little tool that we like to play with that is allows you to actually convert text into a profile that you can then compare to an individual you might be talking to. So we're, you know, about looking at and understanding the mentality of what you do, and that is important because I think, you know, the premise of the work is around thinking, and that ties us into a whole array of applications that are a little bit different than DISC, which is focused on behavior.
Yeah, more behavior, absolutely.
And then Myers-Briggs, which is more of a psychological construct. So, you know, assessments are kind of looking at people from different angles.
Sure.
But the difference in premise means that what you're doing is going to kind of take it in a different direction. And when you have a phrase you like to use when we talk about the difference between, especially DISC, which is often used in sales, and how that kind of applies to what we're doing.
Yeah, we do. We often say, Steve, that if you can change your thinking without changing your behavior, but you can't change your behavior without changing your thinking. So when we give people that information, here's how I process information, and that leads me to do this, if they're going to change that, if we're going to help a salesperson be more effective, oftentimes we got to help them understand how they're coming to their certain point of activity. And their thinking has a big impact on that.
Well, let me jump in and ask a question here, because this topic is very fascinating to me. I mean, we haven't had a chance to delve into any of my info because this show's about you guys. But, you know, my whole premise of my coaching practice is built in the idea of thinking, controlling the results that you get in business. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody's out there trying to make behavioral changes, but if you don't change the mindset, you'll never affect long-term results, right? So I'm trying to get the scope of what you guys cover here. So you're going to analyze my thinking process and how I think. But I'm looking at this in two factors. I'm thinking there's a science side of it, a way I'm predispositioned and wired, you know, I'm creative or I'm analytical or what have you. But then there's my environmental programming where I've been conditioned a certain way because of things around me, people around me, et cetera. Do you guys get into both of those areas? And if so, you know, how does the assessment deal with one that's somewhat, you know, natural, this is who you are, and one that's this is how you've been built, but we can change that.
You want to take that? Okay. So interesting. That's a great point, because in fact, there is that nature-nurture question that comes up, and especially with the brain. You know, people are always like, well, was I born this way? Am I wired this way for life? Is this it? You know, and one of the things that we know is, you know, so the if you look at the scientific data about that, you know, the pendulum swings in different directions, nature, nurture, et cetera. It's really a both. It's an and. As you were just stating, we've got that sort of predetermined wiring, and then we've got all the things that have happened to us. And what we know about the brain is that throughout the course of our lives, it is not in a vacuum. It is interacting with the world, and it does change and evolve. If you think about who you are and who you were, let's say, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, there are certain aspects that are absolutely coherently the same and other aspects that are very different based on what has happened in your world. Mm-hmm. So part of what we talk to people about is the first step is just understanding, and the model gives people an easy way to describe how they like to think. And then we like to really say, you know what, your profile is actually like a rubber band. So once you begin to understand it, this is not a cop out. You can't say, "Well, I'm sorry, but I was just wired that way." You know, I'm not going to do that for you because I just don't like doing that. It's more about saying, "Okay, I understand it. Now, how do I adapt to the world around me?" And we know that from a brain perspective, we all can do that. Mm-hmm. Now, it requires energy, motivation, learning. This is not a casual kind of a thing. We firmly believe that from all of the research that we know, through conscious understanding and awareness, you can start to begin to make those shifts in thinking and then ultimately affect behavior. So leverage and celebrate your natural style, right? And everybody can do that, but that's not enough in today's world. Most people have to also adapt and change to what's around them. So it's a question of how do I leverage what I've got, and then how do I not become a prisoner of my preferences and let that get in my way? And so it's really somewhat individual in terms of where people are at and what they're looking to do with the work. But for most people, it's a combination of both, if that makes sense. And you probably see that in your coaching clients.
Absolutely. Now, and just to ask the question, because of the breadth of what we're talking about here, we ask about your ideal client, and we're really talking about some of these larger corporations and things like that. But isn't this really a tool that could be for any individual that is saying, hey, I want to identify where my brain is and reprogram what I need to take advantage of the most success I can create in my life?
Right, absolutely. It could be, and it often is. Our focus is that business-to-business customer. But it's not uncommon for us to do some work with a large technology company and for them to come back and go, hey, I have a spouse that would like to take this and get some information. Or sometimes I'd like for my spouse to take this.
I'd like to see that sales job take place at home. Hey,
well,
honey.
Actually, you might have just seen it.
I took this test today, and I think you ought to take it.
No, it's really interesting. That does sometimes happen. And I'll never forget, we do get called to work with very unusual folks, with judicial educators. Mm-hmm. And I had a judge come up to me after a session. Yeah, because trying to understand how do you put a judge through a training program and have them really, and the judge comes up to me and he says, this has had a profound impact on something that's very personal to me. And I said, really? And he said, whenever I used to come home, my wife used to say to me, honey, the robes stay in the courthouse. And now I understand what she meant. For 20 years, she's been saying that. So I think, yeah, absolutely, it's relevant. And we have people ask about their kids.
Well, I mean, because my wife, former salesperson, one of the top salespeople for AT&T, and actually we were talking just before the show, and I almost had buyer's remorse here because Jennifer has just set up my wife to take the assessment. So as you were saying that, Andy, I was like, oh, maybe that wasn't such a good idea. Anyway, putting that aside, she's now a therapist, psychotherapist, and has her own thriving counseling practice. But when she saw some of the material this morning, she was really intrigued and because, hey, she said, and I love this, the brain is where it's at right now. So this is really hot. The brain is hot. I'm thinking, all right, yeah, that's kind of cool. But in the therapeutic process, I could see there's some applicability, definitely in the coaching space. But, you know, and I see coaching as a subset of the therapeutic process, coaching as a subset of consulting and so on, as I think of it. How are you seeing this used in a therapeutic process? I guess this is my question for my wife, so hopefully she's listening.
It's very context specific, and I believe that, you know, there's if you kind of want to oversimplify things, you know, there's that thinking aspect of ourselves and that learning aspect of ourselves. And depending on, and it's not too dissimilar from where you might be in a coaching situation, that notion of giving people a way to begin to articulate where it is that they're at and where they want to go. And our model provides a really wonderful platform for that notion of awareness and then ability to then say, ah, now I can see where I am and I can articulate where I need to be in a way that's not too complicated, doesn't right. require a doctoral degree to be able to understand it. And I think it's probably the power of what we've got, both in the business world as in the therapeutic world. It's really easy to understand and kind of apply immediately. So it's used at whatever kind of critical point where that understanding and knowledge about self mm-hmm. Really will make the difference and give people a way to begin to articulate where it is they want to be. And the model works really, really well that way.
Well, you separated two words there. You separated thinking and learning. Mm-hmm. And I'm just curious, does this assessment not only pinpoint how I think, but is it something that we could use to measure how people learn? I mean, you mentioned kids earlier, and that's one of my big things about the educational system is we don't really address how different people learn. I mean, is this something that addresses that as well?
Yeah, it absolutely does. And so if you take that thinking piece, that goes back to how we like to see information, the kind of information we want when we're in a learning situation. So now we're in a corporate university. Do we want to hear lots of facts and figures? Do we want to see things metaphorically? Do we want to interact? Do we want to get up and do things? You know, are we okay with the free-flowing content? The agenda is we're working till 5, or is the agenda very specific what we're doing every 20 minutes? All of those thinking preferences come back to impact the way that we learn. And we do some work with people around what we call whole brain learning design, mm-hmm. because an effective learning program is going to have elements of all of that. Mm-hmm. And because when you think about your audience, you often have people who are made up of all these different preferences. So we sort back to the best design is going to be a whole brain design.
Yeah, that's actually where the work started at GE. My dad was... He knew that some of the programs at Crotonville just didn't have the stickiness. You know, people would walk out and they'd remember dinner more yeah. than they remember what it was. And it's like, great meal last night. Now, what did we talk about during the day? But that's actually part of where it actually started. And so, you know, the two worlds come together. And I think, you know, all of us have been through a program where we're really interested in the content and we just cannot get through mm-hmm. the delivery mechanism. So, you know, that is a big piece of what we do. So it's really looking at those two worlds and where they come together. And any kind of a development process, it's not just about thinking, it's not about learning, it's both of those things. And so this really does apply very effectively to not only your thinking style, but your learning style.
Interesting. So that's a great question, Andy, because as I think about it, and a lot of the practices I'm working, you know, with my clients, you know, the delivery, there's three components as I think of it. The delivery, and then the knowledge transfer, and then the sustainability.
Yes.
And, you know, the training is straightforward. It's training, mm-hmm. classroom, online, whatever that mm-hmm. platform might be. And it might modify it based on whole brain learning, setting up that environment, as you mentioned, Oren. And then it's the knowledge transfer. But creating a training environment that is more applicable to them is going to help the knowledge transfer, letting them work on a live opportunity that they may, in sales yeah. training, I'm thinking in yeah. particular. And then the sustainability. That's where the heavy lifting is in my mind because, you know, I think the number is 60%. Is forgotten. 60 to 70% is forgotten after someone leaves a training program. Mm-hmm. And it's the adult atrocious. Learning model.
It's atrocious.
Yep. And so it's you can make some awareness of things, but you really have to create some levels of reinforcement / sustainability to improve knowledge transfer. So I think of that whole brain model. I'm really curious more about mm-hmm. that. So changing gears a little bit here, as I think about this, is that now you understand, because as you were talking about the tool, you understand... You've been through the assessment. You've been wired. You understand the assessment, right? You helped design the assessment. You understand it. So now you can identify how other people think based on their manner somehow, right? So that's very powerful in the sales process. So if I become more adept at it, it helps you to become... helps me understand how to interact with my customers more effectively. Hence why I look at the DISC tool and... This actually very intriguing. Mm-hmm. You can change the behavior, but not necessarily long term. I change your mm-hmm. thinking. I can also behavior changes follows. So as I think about selling to either of you two, what's that like?
Yeah, when we're in the buyer position.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, I tell you, it's a little treacherous.
I mean, Andy, think about it. Think about selling to, someone who's already got, you know, diagnosing me even before I walk in, right?
Or well, we do that in a positive sense. but you're right. In terms of we teach people to begin to recognize clues, and we would tell you that it's not 100% accurate when you look for certain things, but you can look at somebody's desk. Is it is it cluttered? Is it neat? You can listen. One of the common things in today's selling world is you get a lot of voicemail.
Yeah.
And people with certain thinking preferences, we talk about left side, right side, up or lower. People with a strong left side preference aren't the people that say, and make it a great day at the end of their voicemail message. So even someone's voicemail message could begin to give you some clues into how that person is thinking, which allows you, maybe you leave a little more succinct message to that person. Mm-hmm. Maybe you leave a little more of that general, hope you're having a good day thing. Some people, they don't need you to ask them to have a good day.
Sure.
So that's how you begin to tailor things in a positive sense, not in a, as Ann said earlier, not in a manipulative sense, but in a way of giving them the information in a way that's going to be most impactful to them.
Sure.
Yeah, and that's interesting because I can tell when somebody's done their homework, if they've looked at the model and they're actually referring to it when they talk to me about what it is they're trying to say. And I'll say, well, I know you've got all this focus on whole brain thinking. Sometimes they make the mistake of saying, so what are your preferences, Ann, so I can best tailor what it is that I'm going to say to you, which doesn't usually go too well in the first 3 seconds of the conversation. But I do think it's one of the things that it actually makes us more effective because I can usually zero in, where is this person going with this? What are they trying? And then I can ask for what I need. And that's part of what I, you know, because I know what I need. So I'll say, you know what, I just need, you know, give me the conceptual framework. Give me a big picture overview. I do not want the details right now. I'm going to shut down within, you know, count the seconds down here unless you can get this very high level and strategic. So, you know, one of the advantages for me as a leader and as a purchaser is that I can now say, this is what I need. And if somebody can't deliver that, then, you know, I get a little frustrated. And I think that's really one of the biggest challenges out there in the world of selling today is that we, you know, people are very impatient. And they expect tailored, personalized approaches. They expect that you've done your homework. I'm not any different than anybody else. And so I think but I do have the advantage in that I will articulate what it is that I need. And I know that people need to hear that. And I can do it in a pretty succinct way because I've got a model that I can use.
I was going to say, Ann, that's not just for salespeople selling to you. That's for the VP of sales that's trying to sell to you as well. Those things still hold true to her.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. I can tell exactly what he's, that's right. You reminded me. Recent conversation. That's right.
So for Ann, the phrase they use is "be bold, be brief, and be gone." Is that appropriate?
That's right. That's right. But I think that's true of every executive that's out there.
Absolutely.
The expectation is that homework, you know, has been done. And I think in many instances, an executive is not going to go to the trouble to tell you exactly what it is that they need. So I think that notion of really understanding where somebody's coming from, I believe that is only going to get worse as time goes on and as our time constraints are greater and there's just a lot of noise out there. So, you know, it's going to get more and more complicated, I think.
So really, not only is it a matter of the research, and we had a company on Inside View. Again, Andy, we need that gong, right?
Is this another right.
Inside View.
The endorsement gong.
They're really pushing and talking about social business intelligence and great tool. If you're not using it right now, we'll talk afterwards.
Yeah.
But really, it's a great tool in the sense that it pulls a lot of information together. Now, what it's not pulling together is your type of material.
Absolutely.
And I was like, wow, that's because as time compresses, I mean, the expectation is if someone gets to you, as we're hearing, they're fully versed on what's happening in your business, your industry. Right. They know what, arguably the old saying is, what's keeping you up at night. So if they can solve that, then that's, they're going to have an audience with you. I guess that's just, I don't know if I had a question in there.
Well, the thing that if I could build on that is,
sure.
That's one of the things that's changed in today's selling world from when some of us first started. You were expected to go and talk to somebody and get that information. Now, because of Inside View, because of the internet, because of all the things that are available, I can begin to understand what your challenges are or what Ann's challenges are or Andy's challenges without having that conversation. I might need to confirm them when I come in to see you, but in reality, I should walk in there with a pretty good idea of what's at the top of your list, and that's just very, very different than what we used to do a few years back.
Yeah, Andy, as you were saying earlier, as we've had several guests come on and say, we've had salespeople, they've had salespeople come in and say, so tell me about your business. I mean, those meetings don't last long.
Right? No, absolutely not. And, you know, and part of what I get excited about is that we can we can at least reduce some of that complexity and increase the speed of making a connection with somebody, which is what everybody wants. I don't know a single person out there who's being sold to, and we're all of us as consumers are being sold to every single day and everything that we do, who doesn't really want to kind of have that ability to cut to the chase and feel like, wow, somebody gets me. And one of the things that's interesting about our model is and you probably experienced this, everybody's experienced that person that you connect with and you feel like they can almost finish your sentences. I mean, they just get you in a way that is so exquisite. You just think, wow. And often we think, wow, that person's really smart. They think just like me. But that ability to feel like you've got that connection, that is a very comfortable feeling. And it's a feeling where people, that somebody gets me, they understand me, they're going to be able to solve my problem. And I think that's something that is pretty exciting about, you know, about what we have to offer, is that you can begin to move closer to that place where you can understand what that person needs, to feel that level of trust and feel like this person understands me, and they can thus, by association, then, you know, be able to then respond.
Well, it goes back to the idea: no one buys from someone that they don't trust.
Right.
And building rapport even becomes even more important. And I think about, as you were just talking about, is like in things like Inside View and the Googling somebody, it gives you information about their business and theories around what they may be challenged with and how you might be able to help them. But it really doesn't connect to that person. And that's really the magic of the HBDI.
Right.
Being able to help me, give me some clues around how I can quickly build rapport.
Right. Right. Because what we know is that trust, which is so necessary in the sales process and in that selling connection, looks and feels differently to different people. And so whereas trust might be that I'm willing to share some things about my personal life with one person, that is absolutely what turns the next person off. And so as we begin to define trust, we recognize it varies by buyer and by person. And so if we can do that, I recall that I had a very good salesperson who struggled because she said, my biggest client, we don't connect very well. Mm-hmm. Well, and the deal was she was trying to spend that time on how was your weekend and all those things. And the client was very focused on achieving results. And the connection was there. We just had to make it focus on the client. So the salesperson wanted the connection to be in her world, and that wasn't going to work. But understanding that is what we want people to do. So recognize, how do you gain trust with that customer, and recognize that it is different from customer to customer.
Yeah, and that, yeah, as you were saying, building that trust and rapport and understanding, awareness is half the battle.
That's kind of the antithesis of the golden rule. I mean, it's not about what you know, do unto others as you want done unto you. It's really do unto others as they need and want.
Yeah.
That can be a little bit of a shift. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I think that the beauty is when you can do it with authenticity. It doesn't mean that I'm not suggesting that somebody has to become somebody different. I mean, I know you know, just in looking at some of our client relationships, Oren, I mean, and especially you can imagine the burden on us, because people expect us to really be able to connect. I mean, because we got all this data on them, and so we better be able to deliver,
absolutely,
right? Wouldn't you say that's a little bit extra pressure for our team?
Eating our own cooking is always a fun thing.
Yeah,
we have to do that. But people do recognize it, and it's very interesting because they appreciate it. If you make the effort, they go, okay, I know you're trying to do that. I was thinking, Ann, that one of our largest customers, a gentleman from there, just recently retired. And when we were having dinner with him, he said, by the way, he has a preference in for order and structure in that. And he would say, you know, I appreciate you guys doing that, but I would have been fine if you didn't do that. You know, but he knew that we were making that effort based upon some things that were important to him. And that's the opportunity that we have to make that connection and honor people's preferences as we work with them.
So he saw you were stretching.
He saw that we were stretching. He did. But the nice thing is he appreciated it.
Yeah, there you go.
And it's authentic. Yeah, you're stretching in an authentic manner.
Right.
I think that builds a level of trust. Interesting. Yeah. So as I think about this, now going to our careers and that period of time, how have you seen the world of selling? And Anne, I want to particularly ask you the world of selling, and how have you seen selling in particular between France or Europe and the U.S.? So let's go over a 20, 30-year span of our career. So I'll look to you, because Anne's not that old. So, yeah. Oren, I'm looking at you.
Yeah, I'm going to contribute the old stuff, right?
Yeah, the stuff that's 30 years plus, right?
Nicely done, Steve. Nicely done.
He's trying to connect.
Yeah. I'm right. Watching that. I think that's interesting.
How am I doing? Does it feel authentic? Or sorry,
I guess if we weren't on the radio, we'd say he was sucking up. But we won't say it. We won't
say
that. All right,
since we're not on the radio, right?
You know, I I think we talked about that difference in terms of not information that's available. Mm-hmm. And so when you think about the information, not only that you have available to learn about the customer, because you can find it quickly, whereas you used to go to the library and look up stuff that was outdated the minute it got printed, you're also walking into a situation where the customer has a lot of information. So they've already looked at your company. You mentioned that when we came here. I looked up, looked at your website, did some things. So you walk in a situation where the customer has knowledge about you, about your company, and about your competitors. Mm-hmm. And so there's this knowledge that's out there that you used to spend a lot of your time giving that knowledge. Now we spend much more time talking about what are the challenges and how do we solve those challenges. So that's been a real positive thing. I think the other change that I've seen is as we try to keep salespeople engaged, that interaction between the sales leader and the salesperson is even more important than ever. Mm-hmm. And right now, I think around the globe, engagement is a real challenge. And the number one people still leave their job is their boss. And so we have an opportunity to help that interaction happen better. And we've been working on that as a society, as business for a long time. But we're happy that we get to play a role in making that connection be stronger. And that importance of that I've seen just continue to rise over the last few years.
And you say engagement, really, the engagement in the workforce or the engagement of the workforce, engagement in the job.
Yeah, absolutely. And for me, that's the engagement of my sales team. I have a chance to interact with the other people in our organization to help that as well. But directly with the sales team, because if they don't feel and they don't think that I care and that I'm working with them and supporting them and helping them grow, then they're going to leave. And that is a direct reflection on me.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah, I've seen you really evolve, Oren. Let's get personal. No. I've seen you really evolve over the years in terms of the time you spend coaching and how you coach, in terms of really getting, really tailoring that to the needs of the person that you're coaching versus kind of having it a little bit more sort of everybody needs, you know, to learn this, and you've gotten much more adept, and you spend more of your time actually doing that than you used to.
Yeah, much more of my time than I did at one time. And then again, as we mentioned, as we use our own methodology, that really says that my coaching should be different for each person because they're different.
Sure.
And that takes a little more preparation, and it takes a little more work, and what we talk a lot with our customers, it takes a lot more energy.
Yeah.
But it's a worthwhile investment.
So it's interesting because as you think about this and as the coaching you're doing more of, and I think there's a major gap, and that's one of the things that I'm working on is coaching and leadership, particularly in the sales arena, because I see a major gap and hence an opportunity. I'm a sales guy, right? So with that in mind, I wonder, though, is in the human sciences space that Herman International works in and I work in, do you see more coaching, or do you think it's a function of more coaching because of the industry, the space that we're in, or is it more, would you say that's true of the technology space? I'll speak for myself. Looking at the technology space, I don't remember, that wasn't a measurable, that wasn't an MBO, that wasn't something that was people were looking at to say, how much coaching have you done for your sales team?
Right. Oh, no, I've seen a dramatic change. I think there's a few reasons why. One is, I think a lot of the way we handled learning, we realize isn't really working. And the difference between a coaching relationship and a training event is dramatic in that it's staggered. So it's over time. So you have an opportunity to, you know, break up the learning process over time, which we know is much more brain friendly because rather than taking in a whole lot of information and then trying to execute it and remember it over time, there's a natural drop. I mean, it makes perfect sense when you understand how the brain works. You also understand the way we've designed a lot of our learning. So that notion of taking the learning process and spreading it, staggering it, is actually the term they use in the world of brain and learning. Staggered learning over time provides ongoing reinforcement, ongoing learning. Your chances of that learning sticking go significantly up.
Wow.
It also builds a great rapport between a leader and somebody who's a direct report. I mean, having a coaching conversation is totally different than having a different kind of conversation. And it builds a relationship in a way that it's hard to get at in any other way. And I think one of the reasons why now it's all over the place, so the world of coaching is kind of gone. It's gone from soup to nuts. I mean, almost everybody's a coach and nobody's a coach at the same time. But I believe that there's a really good reason why we're starting to see this advent of coaching. And, you know, example that we were just discussing here, you've seen the results. I mean, wouldn't you agree, Oren, that you've actually seen a dramatic difference in the results that you're getting because you're spending more time understanding what their needs are and then responding to those and then providing them with what they need to move to the next right. level versus it being, let's just get together once a year. We're going to do some great learning event. And let's hope it's what everybody needs and that it sticks and, you know, and then sure. onward and upward. And then let's just focus on the numbers in every conversation. Or that just really doesn't work.
Or even going to the extent of defining coaching. I mean, you think about asking any given sales manager, so did you coach your team?
Right.
Well, yeah, we viewed his funnel.
Yeah, or her funnel. That's right.
He's below plan. And, you know, we had some coaching. and you think about it, that's not really the coaching, I think, that we're referencing here in that regard, right? I mean, Andy, that's kind of a large portion of your with Renegade, you know, Renegade Concepts. Your coaching is really to change their thinking.
Well, yeah, and I think there's a divide that you have to look at in coaching, and it's something that has muddled the term amongst people. Training is different than coaching.
Sure, absolutely.
You know, one thing I tell people that I work with is, look, I'm not here to teach you how to do what it is you do. I'm not here to teach the skill set. I'm here to unlock your potential, and the potential is limited by the thinking. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I'll go back to my personal story of doing Ironman. You know, doing Ironman is not a physical problem for most people. If you look at the times and what it takes to do an Ironman event, most people physically are capable of doing it. It's going to take a commitment and a training regimen and et cetera, and I get that. But it's the mental capacity that keeps most people from being able to take on a challenge like that. And in sales, you've got to deal with the mental capacity. And you guys can, you know, I'll flip this to you as a question. I mean, what have you seen change in the mental side of things in the sales world in the last few years as we've seen a migration from the order taking environment that we had, you know, early in the 2000s to the, hey, I've got to actually go out and be able to run a sales program that we have now?
Mm-hmm. You know, I'll give you an example. One of our customers who's in the consumer product goods business came to us and said, hey, here's our issue. We have great salespeople, but they've been very tactical. And we know that if we're going to achieve the results that we want over the next 5 years, they have to become more strategic. Mm-hmm. So how do we do that? How do we get them in the Herman model to move from this results orientation to this future orientation? Can't give this up. We got to add it. So it's what Ann said earlier. It's and. We need to do this and we need to do that. And that's what we worked with on them. And I think, Andy, to your question, that's the difference. When you start to think about where the focus needs to be, how you grow business, how you develop those relationships, it's that we've got to move from the tactical to that strategic piece. Now, the scary part of that is that sometimes the people with whom we're working today are not those strategic people. So sometimes it's...
You mean natural ability. Right?
Yeah, sometimes even their role in the organization might be more of a tactical, and then we've got to move and find those people. And sometimes we bring them along with us, so it's not like we have to stop, but sometimes it's, again, where are we taking this business over the next few years, and how do we do that? And we work on that quite a bit with our own sales team, because there's such a balance in sales. We have to make our numbers, so that's mm-hmm. really today. But we've got to be laying the groundwork and the foundation. You know, we talk about Absolutely. Pipeline for what 2013 and 2014 and 2015 look like. So how do we achieve that balance? And that's really the way I've seen that a big transition around that over the last 4 or 5 years.
Well, and you know, the world is different. So, and this it's a little trite to say that the world is different because, you know, duh, the world is different, as my son would tell me. But there's a phrase that's been coined called VUCA, which maybe you've heard of. You've heard about VUCA.
I haven't heard of VUCA.
The U.S. Army War College actually coined this phrase. And I think it really aptly describes the way the world works today. And V stands for volatile, right? U stands for uncertain. Okay, so volatile, would you agree that volatility is there? Uncertainty is out there. C stands for complexity. So I think we've moved from complicated to complex, which is a very big step. And A stands for ambiguous. And every audience I talk to, including the one I'll be talking to later this week, mm-hmm. acknowledges that that pretty much describes the way I feel when I wake up and I look at what I need to do today. Because everything could change within a moment. I used to know what I was supposed to know, and now I don't know that I know that. And things aren't as clear as they used to be. And boy, it seems awfully complex. How do I? So that world that we live in is a reality. It's mm-hmm. a reality for those who are selling. It's a reality for those who are buying. Many of us grew up with a whole lot of learning coping mechanisms that are not really well prepared for this world that is very different. Much of what we learned in our early years, what I learned in sales at an early time, it was much more tactical. I was selling IBM mainframes in Europe. And, you know, it was pretty much, you kind of knew what you needed to do. You knew who you needed to talk to, what you needed to say. Sure. I mean, this was really... It wasn't that complex, really. Now, the world has gotten to a place where you are constantly stepping into a situation where you need to be thinking, anticipating, looking around corners. Somebody referred to this competency as seeing around corners, that ability to problem solve live with your customer because they may have something that just happened 10 minutes before your meeting that has completely changed their world. So you can't go in and be all ready to roll. So part of what this is, part of what we've been doing and looking at working with the model is to help people, first of all, understand, okay, in what ways is this going to be a problem for you? How do you work with your natural preference to be able to be adaptive to this new world? And it's not like you're throwing away anything that you knew to do how to do before. It's adding on that flexibility and that mental agility, which I think is going to be a critical competency for anybody interacting with people and especially customers in the future.
And interacting with people in so many different mediums, right? From face-to-face to socially to, I mean, on social media platforms, virtually, via webinars, and that's the changing world. It brings up an interesting question. Based on the results that you're seeing, are you seeing a different result based on millennials versus boomers?
In terms of the brain dominance data?
Yeah.
So I've been really intrigued with that because I thought, opportunity for research, and I love research. So what's been very interesting for me, and this is true of cultures as well, because a lot of people ask that question, Joe, so are the Italians different than the Germans, different than the,
Having worked with Italians, the French, and Germans at the same time in the same room, yeah, they're all different.
They're all very different. They're all very different. So what's really interesting to me is there are differences. There are distinct behavioral differences that you will see across generations and across cultures. What we have found fascinating for me, which is really interesting, is that the brain dominance data, however, tends to be pretty consistent when you look at occupations, if occupations are pretty much the same occupation. So a nurse in Japan, a boomer nurse or a younger nurse, etc., you begin to see a lot of those same thinking style preferences begin to emerge. The cultural context, and this gets a little bit back to the comment that you made earlier, Andy, that cultural context reinforces some behaviors and some aspects more than others, and we tend to play those up and be expected to behave in different ways. And our cultural icons from a generational perspective are quite different. But what we found is that the thinking preference is actually your way to bridge the gap between generations and cultures. And one of the reasons why I think a lot of our customers are global customers is because they found that the validity of this really bridges across cultures. And so I can say, you know what, we're different in a million ways, but I can begin to understand how to talk to you based on our thinking preferences. And that's a starting point in a place where we actually might have some similarity and some overlap. So how do we use that to our advantage? Wow. That notion of dexterity is important. You need to be culturally savvy. You also have to understand generational differences. But our brains are, there's a lot that's pretty predictable and that we can begin to look at that in spite of some strong cultural differences where we can find a way to meet in the middle and say, I get you, because, we're not all that different in terms of the way we're kind of wired.
Wired, interesting. Cool. All right, so as I think about this, and because there's so much data and information, and we can talk for hours, and so I think there's another conversation I'd like to have you come back, bring back one of your customers, talk about it and how they're utilizing it in their environment. I'm very intrigued with this whole brain learning environment, Oren, as you talked about. With that said, so someone new coming into the world of sales. So someone's coming to you, Oren, and they are looking for some counsel. So I'm going to become a sales professional. What counsel, what kind of guidance might you give them?
I have a son who just landed his first sales job about 2 months ago. He's actually been in a sales position, but he decided that this was an area he wanted to go into. So, of course, we've talked, and professional deformation, I can't help. I actually did wire him up. I swore I would never do that. But and it's been really interesting. So, for me, part of it was...
You wired your son up.
I did,
like
I did.
Dad,
I swore I'd never do that. What's been interesting for me, and part of my counsel to him was one of the things that he needed to keep in mind was that whatever it was that he's learning today, so they sent him off to a training program. Mm-hmm. He came back all fired up, et cetera, and I'm kind of observing how they are onboarding him through what I'm hearing from him, which is really kind of interesting. And part of our conversation has been to say, understand that whatever it is that you learn today will probably change next year and the following year and the following year. So, you know, nothing's set in stone. So mm-hmm. for this particular role in this particular organization and at this time in your life, et cetera, a lot of what you're learning may be true, but recognize that in the same way I talk about things that you have never even heard of before because they predated you, that cycle of change is happening so fast. So think of this as a ride. Look at the learning as an opportunity to grow. And I think that's a relatively easy conversation to have with somebody in their 20s. I think it's a little bit different when you're dealing with somebody who maybe is more advanced and who's getting some of those same challenges. And, you know, it's mm-hmm. kind of going, wait a minute, nobody told me this is what I'd signed up for. But that the requirement's going to be the same for everybody. So if you can look at that learning and that change as part of the thrill of the ride, mm-hmm. rather than sort of expecting I'm going to figure it all out, I'm going to know what I need to do, and off I go, you won't get as frustrated with what is inevitably going to be a demand for great flexibility in your thinking.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
So that's kind of what I said to him, and he said, "Yeah, Mom, that brain stuff again, right?" Yeah. I said, "Yeah, sorry, son."
Flexible.
That's right. That's
right.
Be
prepared for change. Yeah.
That's right. Absolutely.
Steve, I would say the flexibility thing as well. And here's a story that most salespeople can relate to. You go out and you put this proposal, this presentation together. Mm-hmm. You make the presentation. And you get the business, and you come back, and you go to the office, or you go virtually, and you go, wow, I was awesome today, and I got this deal. And everybody says, first thing they say, they email you, call, say, send me that presentation, because we assume it's the presentation that's so awesome. And everybody goes and uses that same presentation. They go out, and they present it, and they don't get any business. And they go, what the heck happened, you know? And so what we've got to recognize is that presentation connected with that customer, but there's no guarantee that same presentation connects with the next customer. So that flexibility to say, recognize that certain elements of this work with one customer, but again, I've got to adapt that to each of my customers. And that's almost counterintuitive, because we believe if I learn how to do something, I just keep getting better at it.
Sure.
It will get me great results. The reality is the doing right now is if I learn to be flexible and adaptive and look at my customer specifically, that's what's going to allow me to be very successful. And that's a little bit of a hard concept. And again, it goes against what we often learn as we're growing up.
Well, you know, just to add another thought to that, too. I mean, I get changing the presentation for the customer, but going back to what you guys do with the thinking, you got to understand you, mm-hmm. because even if the customer needed the same presentation, it still might not work. It's like going to the comedy club and you hear the guy tell a joke and it's really funny, and you go home and tell the joke and botch the punchline, right?
Right.
I mean, there's a delivery mechanism that's important too, and you need to understand how to deliver that presentation in the same fashion. So even if it's at the right audience, right? Yeah. Otherwise, change the presentation all you want, you're still not getting it.
Absolutely. And left to our own devices, we will create a presentation that we really like.
Right.
You know, I mean, yeah, absolutely. And hopefully the customer likes it, but we will really like it. And that's what happens. You know, we joke often, we say recognition is the first step to recovery. And so one, I've got to recognize what my preferences are, because they impact the emails that I send, the conversation that I have, the questions that I ask. And so once I understand that and I begin to focus on the customer, now I will ask different questions. And it's getting out of that. Our preferences really are that comfort zone for us. And sometimes, mm-hmm. as Ann said, it's a rubber band. We got to stretch into some areas that might not be as comfortable for us. And again, notice we don't say competence, because I can become very competent in areas that aren't my preference, but I've got to be aware of that to make that stretch.
It's really tuning into the customer and understanding their preferences, and not just your own. Right. So really what I hear is the idea of the old sales professional who was kind of narcissistic, or, you know, enough about me. Why don't you tell me about me, Mr. Customer? Yeah. those days are dying. Is that what I'm hearing?
Oh, uh-huh. Totally. Totally. Totally.
Thank
and
goodness.
I also think that the point that I would make is that we tend to think of that extra effort, that sort of, God, this is really hard, and feeling mentally stuck, as, you know, and the discomfort for me, when somebody says, I'm really struggling with something, I think, wow, that means learning is happening. We're at a ripe opportunity for learning to take place. So it's reframing discomfort, reframing that notion that you're out of your comfort zone as being an opportunity. Wow, I'm actually moving forward. I'm growing. So it's, again, that's a reframing, because I think there's going to be more and more of that going on. Certainly true for me every day. I'm constantly having to kind of look at how I'm looking at the world. So
absolutely. And that's that opportunity for a sales manager and the sales leader to have a role in that, to encourage that growth, to support it, sometimes a challenge, and say, hey, this is a great presentation, but I'm not sure where's that future look, or where's the implementation, what does that look like, knowing, again, the strengths and some of the less preferred areas of your own sales team.
Yeah, absolutely. So really the tool, it bringing it both on a business perspective, understanding your customer base, and it also really understanding how your customers think, what are their preferences, so that you can better appeal to them and connect with them, build rapport, because at the end of the day, people buy from people they trust and have rapport with.
Right.
Good. Well, this has been a phenomenal show. Interesting. And as always is the case, we never have enough time. And again, I think I want to, Andy, what do you think? Having him back on with a customer?
Absolutely. I think it'd be a great show.
Absolutely. I think hearing some of the results and hearing how they rave about your stuff, I'm already sold on it. So we're talking more about that. But good. Well, this is Steve Cadley from Atlanta Sales Talk Radio, and my co-host and today host, Mr. Andy Lowe, and producer of the show. So he's the one who drives all the knobs. I have a curtain here, so we don't normally see that. But anyway, wonderful show. Thank you again. And until next time, please, everyone remember, everybody's in sales, and happy selling.